Welcome to the Australian Chiropractors Association podcast. The ACA is the peak body representing chiropractors in Australia. These podcasts explore the science, art, philosophy, and politics of chiropractic, as well as reviewing the latest research and discussing how chiropractors can strive for excellence in practice.
Welcome to the Australian Chiropractic Association podcast. I'm your podcast host, Dr. Kim Lee Zhong. I'd like to begin our podcast by respectfully acknowledging the traditional custodians of our country throughout Australia and acknowledge the important role Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people play and continue to play in our communities. We pay our respects to the elders past, present, and emerging. Well, listeners, I really appreciate everybody continuing to listen to our podcast series, and this will be the final one before we wrap up for the year. So I'm really excited. I've sort of saved the best to last, as they say. I have been harassing this dear friend of mine who I've known for a good part of almost 30 years now. And I really wanted to talk to him because he is well-esteemed and very intelligent and has all the credentials to talk about our next topic. I know that the students who follow the podcast are really always keen to find out more about how they can apply information that they hear into practice. And today, students and new grads, you're going to be in for a treat. And I will also say that seasoned chiropractors in the field would probably find this very beneficial as well. I certainly, having had the discussion, think it's really beneficial to my practice. But I want to be able to share this information with all our listeners. Today, we have a really important discussion. I think we do see a lot of this, and I don't think that there is enough being said about this. And I'd like to expand a bit more on it with our expert advice from our guest today. I want to introduce him because he's a dear friend of mine. I've known him for, like I said, almost 30 years now in practice. We graduated together, so it's been an awfully long time ago, and I'm absolutely pleased as punch to have Dr. Darren Little in our podcast today. A little bit of a background. Dr. Darren Little is a chiropractor and craniopath based in Artarmon and in Surry Hills, Sydney. Darren works with a number of dentists and specialists across Sydney to improve the long-term health prospects of each individual, especially the kids and their co-management for enhanced airway and craniofacial development. Darren is the current president of the Sacro-Occipital Technique International Alliance. He's also the past president of SOT Organisation of Australia, and he's also the recipient of the 2012 Saucy International Chiropractor of the Year. See, I told you he was well-credentialed. He's advanced, certified in SOT chiropractic technique, and is an internationally certified craniopath. He's a published author, and in 2011 developed the International Craniopathy Manual, based on the text from Dr. Major D. Jarnett, which is now used as a teaching text around the world. Darren has a keen interest in temporomandibular dysfunction, diagnosis and treatment, and runs three family-based wellness practices with his wife, Beck, who I can vouch for as being a wonderful human being, providing care for people of all ages and especially children and the adolescent. He has lectured around the globe on sacro-occipital technique and cranial adjusting, sleep and breathing disorders in children, and co-treatment with dentists. As you can see, that was quite an introduction, and I want to welcome Dr. Darren Little to our podcast. Welcome, Darren.
Oh, thank you, Kim. That was a mouthful. That no, it's a pleasure to be here. It's great.
No, I can't begin to thank you. And everything that I've just caught out there, I want people to understand the nature of how much effort, time, energy that you have put into for you in terms of what you do in this space. This sort of stuff does not come overnight, and we've been colleagues for up to 30 years now, and I've just watched from a distance how hard you've worked to achieve all these, and full credit to you and your expertise in this field.
Yeah, thanks, Kim. It does take a long time, and you know, as the knowledge comes to me because there's a need, and I recognize that there is something that is lacking in my understanding, I just go and learn it, and that's across different professions and different fields. And yeah, it's taken a long time to get there, so it is challenging to share this knowledge in a way which can get new graduates and people that are new to this understanding and maybe new to craniopathy up to speed. But That's what I'm trying to do today. I'm going to try and just give you my summary of my understanding, and maybe that helps kind of us in practice, the way we look at maybe some issues that are arising, or just a different framework from which we can start to address a person's health issues.
Absolutely. And I do think that a lot of our new graduates and also the students who do listen on our podcast are always asking those sorts of questions. The what if I'm confronted with this? How do I deal with this? And so I'm hoping today will not necessarily answer all the questions, but more or less provide an opening for those young and even those in practice, like I said earlier, to ask the appropriate questions and then maybe take them down that path of going where you have, and in turn opening up more understanding about this whole space.
Yeah, I think that's true, because if a parent comes to you and they want to have a conversation about their child, it's great to have a broader view on some of those issues and be able to speak the language and have that communication, so that they understand that you get the big picture, and that their role as a chiropractor plays a pretty big role in that management. So yeah, hopefully
Yeah,
we can.
and we're going to dive into that a little bit more. So today, just for our listeners, really what I wanted to dive into, and I sort of picked Darren's brain a little bit about this prior to the podcast. And basically, we've come up with a topic whereby Darren's got to talk to him a little bit more about helping kids create proper craniofacial development, improve posture and airway patency. He's going to come up from a multidisciplinary approach. I always find that word hard to say, disciplinarian approach. So maybe to begin with, Darren, if you could maybe give us a little bit of background, how did you get interest in craniofacial development? It seems like such a very niche area within our profession.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, as a chiropractor, as an SOT craniopath, it became pretty apparent quite early on that there's this connection between the skeletal alignment and function, the TMJ and the temporomandibular joint, and the occlusion of the teeth, and how they were all interrelated. And I couldn't really get the long-term results that I wanted with my patients on my own. Other professions were seeming to resolve these issues, and I really couldn't do it. So I wanted to still be that primary healthcare practitioner, that was impacting the child and the person as a whole, enhance their well-being. Yet the more I was asking that question of, okay, why is someone struggling? What are the reasons for that? Got more and more entangled in their early stage development. Kids seem to be veering away from their normal genetic course of their growth. So, I also realized that if I wanted to be competent as a practitioner, I had to have that understanding and the explanation, and not always just have the solutions myself.
So just for our listeners, when you say early development, what age are we talking about here, Darren?
The more I study it, it gets earlier and earlier. Initially, we were looking at kids that were going into appliances and braces, and then we were looking at kids who were having sort of developmental delays, and then we were looking at kids starting to breastfeed, and now it's really from birth. So I'm going to tailor this talk into the different age levels, but really, there are things that we can do and encourage from birth, and maybe even pre-birth, but at birth, to really start that natural growth and development from occurring the way it should.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So your interest, in terms of how you got into it, was there a particular patient that made it significant for you where it just wasn't resolving, like you're saying, and then you embarked on this whole pathway, or was it just a collective thing that you just kept noticing within your community? There was a lot of these kids come presenting to you with such difficult and challenging presentations.
Yeah, look, I think there were kids that were coming to me where the dentists were really struggling with getting their symptoms or some of their development under control, and myself and some of these other dental practitioners were talking the same language. Then I didn't really realize how much it impacts their growth and development, and some of these kind of health issues that the kids have, until One of my own kids had this issue, so I'll talk about that in a minute. But that was one of the driving factors where I really had to delve into, okay, what's going on here, and who do I need to support me to get the results that I need? So if I wanted to touch on kind of a little bit about, as chiropractors, we look at a person's posture. And when I was looking at kids and looking at adults, you know, those postural habits I understood happened at a very early age. And what I know is that that poor posture affects our jaw function. It affects our jaw position, our occlusion, and then ultimately that's going to have an impact on our airway and on their nervous system. So the important thing is that the reverse is also true. So if you have a compromised airway in a child, that's going to override the whole child's posture for survival, and it's going to win every time at doing that. So we can't win the battle as chiropractors to create a really good posture if there's a forward head carriage that is actually being required for that child to breathe. And so, you know, the jaw and the occlusion is not going to develop appropriately if they're stuck in that posture.
Clinically, we as chiropractors, any chiropractor would tell you that posture is such a huge important factor. And so we do see that clinically. But do you know, maybe you can share it with our listeners, what are some of the latest research regarding forward head posture and the relationship between that and mouth breathing?
Yeah, there's a lot of research that's coming out about obstructive sleep apnea and kids. And you know, really, given some of the stats there, I mean, 5% of kids in America have obstructive sleep apnea. One in four Americans have an airway disorder of some sort. So, you know, if kids can't breathe, then they don't get a good quality sleep. Their brains don't process, they don't recover properly. So they have things like learning behavior issues. Bedwetting is really often an indicator that they've got this sleep disordered breathing going on. And that's not even to mention things like headaches, migraines, joint pain, grinding of teeth. They're all a list of common ailments where there is a poor quality sleep, and that's got to do with the airway. So it's tied in with open mouth breathing, their tongue posture, hyperventilation, and also these skeletal and muscular imbalances. So if, you know, the research showing that if you have an open mouth posture, you tend to develop a narrow upper jaw, which is the maxilla. Your mandible tends to sit posteriorly, and you start to develop this long face, right? Now, I mean, the good news is that if you change from being a mouth breather to a nasal breather, then that facial growth can change. And it does change in a favorable direction. And even malocclusion, which is crooked teeth and cross bites and overbites, that can actually respond really favorably as well when you fix the breathing habits. We don't want kids, we don't want them sort of starting life with really poor functional habits. And that's going to kind of drive that development and that growth away from what the ideal should be. And really prevention as a chiropractor is our focus. So you know, with a forward head posture, that's often the result that there's this compromised airway and that they need to breathe. But you can have forward head posture from like having a Tex neck, right? And so we need to then decide, okay, is it coming from that, or are there some other issues that might be creating this change of posture? You're not really going to know unless you know what to ask and you start to look for some of the signs.
In your experience, just out of, I don't mean to interrupt you there, Darren, but in your experience, clinically speaking, do you suspect that there may be cases in utero that may have contributed towards possibly some of these obstructive issues, as well as forward head carriage? And, you know, as we often discuss, the nature of the neck being subluxated, whether or not any of that has contributed towards the possible likelihood of when they the kids are hitting that early stage of development, all these temporomandibular dysfunctions.
Yeah, look, there may be some things that are happening in utero that is stopping proper development. Mind you, most there isn't a really proper structural curves to the spine when their babies are born. So we're not looking at cervical curves and lumbar curves and thoracic kyphosis. We're actually just looking at how is the cranium growing and developing and the facial the facial structures. But it really, that growth and development takes off when the baby's born. And if there's any kind of stresses that happen during that birthing process that is affecting their position of the occiput or the upper cervical region, that might set up some dysfunction that's affecting not just the neurology, but the way that the cranium is moving and the way that it can grow and expand. Yeah, so I just wanted to go, there was a lady that was on the podcast a while ago, Shireen Lim. She's a dentist who is in Western Australia, and you know, she spoke on, about mouth breathing, and that's kind of one of her specialties as a dentist, and she works in this field. So that's worth going back and having a listen to as well, as a, you know, a conjunction
reference point
talk. Yeah. So she's, and she's also posted a lot of stuff online on research regarding kids with mouth breathing and obstructed sleep apnea, and how that relates to poor maxillary expansion and associated other kind of dental issues as well. So
one of the things that I know clinically speaking regarding parents' concern is when we talk about having kids breathe properly through their nose passages, which obviously involves some degree of using taping. And one of the things that I recall Buteyko also encourages, the Buteyko method, is the nature of using some form of taping to encourage the nasal, almost like forcing the airway through the nasal passages. Have you ever felt, and I certainly have noticed this when I've spoken to parents about that possibility of using that, is that their concern of, you know, having the child have their mouth taped be of a, you know, a more of a concern that they can't breathe. It actually stops breathing altogether. Is there a concern with that technique, or is that something that we can work with other practitioners and then in turn encourage the parents to ultimately engage in that sort of practice?
There would be, I think coming towards taping requires a bit of training and practice, and you don't want to jump to that step straight away, but that can definitely be a useful tool, because we do know that the more you use your nose to breathe and using those passages, they do remain patent and they do try to stay open, and it gets easier to breathe as you're using those that airway. It does encourage kids to keep their lips together and their mouth closed, but there may be interventions that need to happen before that. So, you know, there may be a reason why that child can't breathe through their nose, and if it's obstructive, which is potentially enlarged tonsils or adenoids, you know, you may need to get an ENT on board who's going to assess that. There may be a deviated septum in the nose, or the turbinates might be enlarged, and so that just makes that obstruction really challenging for that child to be able to breathe appropriately through the nose. But we do want to encourage that changing of the mouth breathing, because most mouth breathing tends to be a habit that we do, and that can be changed. So, you know, it's the reason that's really important is because the function of the tissue and the structures that actually drives the development of that form. So what I mean by that is that it's the tissue that is causing the bone to want to develop normally, the position of the tongue, the lips tone. And when the tongue's not sitting in the right position up on the roof of the mouth, it's sitting low, when the lips are open, it doesn't have those pressures and those tensions that allow the bone to grow. So that's the main reason why the bone and their facial features aren't developing. There are some examples of where the form is what's driving poor function, and that does happen. I mean, there might be chromosomal defects, or there may have been injury, or there are other sort of genetic conditions that might do that. But in general, it is the other way around, which is our environment. You know, it could be our diets, it could be habits that we've got. It's creating this generation of very long-faced, retreated mandibles, mouth-breathing kids, and these kids are struggling to thrive, and they are dysregulated to the max. You know, and you've only got to see them. They just can't regulate their emotions. Their brains aren't forming and developing properly because they're not getting really good quality airway and sleep. You know, and that's not even to mention the tension stresses on the nervous system because of their forward head posture and their locked up occiputs and extensions in, you know, sublocations. So,
So in terms of that, so you touched on the nature of form versus function. If we look at the aspect of the growth of the child's face in the cranium, are you able to determine whether or not, or see in cases whereby one is more the predisposing factor to the other? So if, let's just say, in terms of their development, is it the cranium that generally is the dictating factor? Or are we talking simply on a mechanical level, this forward head posture is the primary driving factor? Are we able to differentiate it? So therefore, from a, as in with chiropractic, we always like to address the primary issue, right? So
Sure.
can we in turn decipher if one is the primary, or do they always occur simultaneously as they
I think
continue,
they
as
do,
they grow?
Smith Casey. I think they go both ways, and I think there are consequences to our forward head posture and our poor quality breathing that kind of drives this poor growth and development. And yet also, I think that the lack of airway and this hypersensitive, reactive kids who just are trying to buffer their nervous system by mouth breathing, because that really, when you're caught up in a sympathetic wound up state, which a lot of kids are these days, they tend to mouth breathe to regulate that, and then that is a symptom of that stress response, and so therefore then their posture and their facial features and their cranium sort of doesn't develop and grow. So it does go both ways, but the earlier you get on, I think posture becomes more secondary to the soft tissue, lip tone, nasal breathing aspect of it.
Development.
But as they get older, certainly when their posture is really poor, if they're studying a lot, then they're going to find it really hard to, keep their lips together and breathe properly and, grow and develop. And, if you're bending, if they're bent over like the twig, they're going to grow that way, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
One stat I really like is that the facial growth of a person is pretty much 90% developed by the age of 11. All their facial features are
Wow.
grown. So what that tells you is that, correct facial function, like being able to suck properly as a baby, being able to chew properly and chew correct foods that are going to stimulate the bone growth and stimulate the jaw development, be able to swallow properly, be able to breathe properly, that all actually needs to be established really early on in life, and at least by 11. Now, ideally early on, like when they're 4, 5, and 6, and that's why you're going to need people like orofacial myologists who give you exercises. You have speech pathologists who get the tongue moving properly and pronunciation, behavioral optometrists are helping with these sorts of things. I mean, they are all going to play a role in getting the proper function so that the body can develop. And everyone's trying to work towards the greatest good. There's no right or wrong, and there's not just one that's going to do the best result. It's actually finding out which one's going to give the most impact and when you need to bring them on board. And I might touch on that a bit later about when's the best time for those things as well. So.
Yeah, I find that invaluable, that collaboration with the other professions in the ability to try and serve the patient themselves. I often find that sometimes, maybe I'm a bit out of line in saying this, but clinically speaking, over 30 years, I tend to find that sometimes ego can get in the way of the patient's development or improvement,
Absolutely.
and which is a shame because all we could do is, or it should be working collectively together, collaboratively, in order to get the best outcome for the patient, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's great having a knowledge of all those other fields and know how they work and how that all integrates together and being able to talk the same language, but you don't always have all the solutions yourself. And knowing when to refer out is just as powerful as, when you don't, and when you can go, actually, I think we can manage this ourselves. Let's save you a lot of heartache and going to all these practitioners versus we are not getting somewhere here. And it's not the chiropractic's not working, it's just that we need some assistance to get better results.
That also adds towards the validity of us being a primary care practitioner, being able to identify that there is an issue here and that this person requires extra help from another practitioner within the field that may assist what we do, right? And I
And we
think
as
that.
chiropractors, particularly as let's say a pediatric chiropractor who understands craniopathy, I think we are in a unique position to be able to be that primary practitioner, the one that and can pick up on things really early, because we can do a lot with the child from birth, But a dentist can't do much until they're 4 or 5 at a minimum. And, you know, there are other practitioners that really don't like to start till later on. So we are there very early on, watching, guiding, trying to minimize the impact of some of these things. And when we see it going off course, or we're seeing these habits forming where we need assistance, or the nervous system's really struggling, we're going to bring these other practitioners on board at the right time to aid us in that goal of getting them back on track. So,
100%. Couldn't agree more, which is fantastic. So just before we step into a little bit more detail about the practitioner's co-management, I just want to come back to us as a practitioner, a chiropractic. Can you talk a little bit about the adjustments that you do on the pediatric skull?
Absolutely. Well, the floor of the cranium is kind of embryologically, it's derived from cartilage, which means that it develops into a fairly firm bone. And while the rest of the skull, like the parts of the temporal bone, the parietal bones, they're all derived from membrane. And so they tend to have a resulting bone which is kind of a bit more pliable, it's a bit more flexible. And that means that there is this growth and an ability to be flexible throughout life, so that the cranium can expand and contract and pump CSF around the brain, and it has this pliability to it. The important structures of the cranium go through the floor of the cranium, and that's why it's that firmer bone, and it's to protect those structures. So, you know, as a craniopath, I want to be able to impact that area the most. The adjustments that I do, they're very gentle pressures, I suppose, to the cranium, and that just kind of helps to remove the tension that's on the inside of the skull. There's no cracking when I do cranial adjustments with babies. There's no activator on the head as such. It's more very calming, it's very soothing, it's very relaxing. And many of the kids' adjustments I do are inside the mouth, so they're intraoral. And that's because the palate and the upper jaw, the maxilla, it's a great guide as to where the stresses are in the system. So the suck reflex on a baby is often reduced if there's a cranial fault or if there's a distortion. And an underdeveloped maxilla, or a TMJ problem, it's often going to affect the baby's ability to be able to breastfeed, which is actually something that we want to encourage. That proper feeding with the tongue function and the pressure on the roof of the mouth is really, really great at setting up that proper tongue motion and getting those pressures, getting the face developing properly. If there's a heightened gag reflex, that can often indicate that there's some irritation from cranial nerves coming out of the base of the cranium. And it's important that we look at the junction between the sphenoid and the occiput, which is the sphenobasilar junction. And that's kind of right in the middle of the head, and there's a lot of nerves that exit around there. And that junction actually doesn't fuse up and become, you know, rigid until the age of mid-20s. So it's a pliable area of the skull that has supposed to have movement. And it's really important that that area, and I address that area with babies as well, making sure that it's freely moving and that there's nothing impinging on or being affecting the tension or tone of any of the nerves that come out from that area. So I guess from an SOT perspective, which is a sacro-occipital technique, if I talk a little bit about some of the lesions that we find, the narrowing of the face and the skull, it keeps the cranial system restricted, and it's unable to get into a state of flexion. And that kind of creates a lack of CRI, or cranial rhythmic impulses, and they're really important for CSF flow and motion. And we tend to have these extension lesions and fixations within the skull. So, you know, there's going to be some sympathetic response to that because of that internal rotation or the extension of the cranial bones. And there's going to get musculoskeletal kind of reactions to that sympathetic sort of response. You're going to get tensions in the body, and those compensations are going to go through the whole system. You're going to get jamming up of the sutures of the skull. And look, the longer that compensation happens, then the greater that distortion pattern is going to occur. So, you know, it's going to pull those bones, those facial bones, down, narrow. So they kind of go inferior, posterior, and medially in that approach. So when there's a compromise, in the airway, like with the nasal passages, the nasopharynx, the oropharynx passages, the cervical curve is going to change as well, right? So it's going to become anterior in forward head posture. You're going to get an increase in your kyphosis. You're going to get mechanical compromise. You might get an increase then in your lumbar sacral angle. You're going to get unstable SI joints. You know, you can see where this is leading this poor compromised child into a really unhappy mechanical dysfunctional state. You know, if we can get onto it early, we can start to reduce a lot of those compensating patterns. So that's a descending physiological problem that happens from the facial cranial structures. But keep in mind, once again, it also goes the other way, right? So if you've got poor posture, you've got muscle imbalances around the pelvis, poor foot control, that's going to lead to then a forward head posture, which then leads to an underdeveloped occlusion. And then you end up getting all these kind of growth patterns affecting it from that aspect as well. So it kind of goes both ways. I mean, and you know that our chiropractic adjustments, we adjust the spine so we can help their brain regulate things better. That's just what we do. I feel like I impact that regulation a better when I'm working on the cranial system and I'm reducing those cranial faults and those cranial tensions. The parasympathetic nervous system is highly influenced by the cranial dural system, and a child that is caught up in that fight or flight stress response, you know, they can really benefit from really trying to enhance that parasympathetic tone. So, you know, the vagus nerve exits from the base of the skull and it actually comes out through the foramen magnum, and that is between the temporal and the occipital bones. And, you know, we all know how important that is to rest and digest and calm down the system. So that's kind of some of the main areas I would focus on, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's significant, the amount of information that you've just divulged there. I think that those who are not familiar with SOT or have thought about embarking in on some SOT work, I can highly recommend doing the SOT series. It'll give you a little bit more, for our listeners, those who have never done it, give you a little bit more clarity about what Darren's talking about. And it makes sense once you move further down the chain of studying more of those to begin with categories and moving on into the cranial work that SOT offers. I can't sort of speak highly enough of it. So I really appreciate you just sharing that simplistic, well, for those who understand a simplistic view, but those who may not, at least know that, yeah, that's just open up another avenue of discussion for themselves, right?
Absolutely, because you know you're going to get patients coming in that have a TMJ problem, or they've got some sort of head pain, or they have a symptom which requires you to look a little bit above C1. And you know, having the skills and the understanding of what might be going on there is really useful. And I'm not saying that you know skeletal, you know, chiropractic adjusting is awesome, and it has a great influence on the nervous system, and it really helps in so many ways. I feel that the nervous system and people's development and some of their kind of health issues are really a lot, can be affected by working a bit higher up. And you know, and I'm interested in that, you know, working with dentists and having an interest in the TMJ and their development is just an interest of mine. So I had to learn craniopathy and TMJ work. And you know, I learned from people like Bob Walker doing chorodontics back in the 90s. And then I did some dental seminars and then did some advanced cranial work. And so you're just building on your knowledge from, you know, as you go along.
I think that that's so important because whether we like it or not, we are going to be presented with such cases. You know, you might find that the local orthodontist, the local dentist, who has heard of chiropractic being of some benefit, might knock on your door, send people down to you. And, you know, if you're not armed and ready, being able to identify and know what's going on with that patient, you might be left, you know, behind as such. So I think that that's without saying, without it goes without saying that it's really important to be able to expand our technique and our repertoire. That's why I think one of the joys of chiropractic is that you never stop learning. You know, we've been together being in practice for come up 30 years now, I reckon, isn't
Mine
it?
is, yeah.
Yeah. So it's amazing to know that there's so much more that even in that time frame that I have been working, you've been working, there's still more that we could be learning. Stuff that we haven't even, you know, I'm always amazed about this new stuff, new technique and new adjusting ways of correcting and helping the patient.
Yeah, because you know, when you you're trying to help kids and adults as well that have complex health issues. And you're trying to come at it from a let's get this person balanced, let's get them functioning better. And you know, that's what some of the other professions are trying to do as well. But they've just got their own tools to do it, and we've got our own tools. We just tend to have a little bit more impact into their general nervous system and help their body regulate better. And so I find that all those other professions really need us to be able to get their job done better. And they're coming on board, and they're really looking for those practitioners who have that same broad understanding about the health issues that people are having, and be able to talk the same language and be able to work together.
Absolutely. Now, you've touched on working with other professions, and we touched on that earlier as well. Tell us, maybe to enlighten some of our listeners about how does that work? Do you go about it in a way that you sit down and have a cup of coffee? Do you sit down and swap notes? How do you approach that aspect of working with other professions? Because I'm sure some of the new practitioners, they might be going, do I just knock on their door? Do I tell them that I'm capable of doing this? Or is it a case of demonstrating to them our knowledge base so that then they can feel more comfortable referring? How did that all come about for you?
I think there's a combination there. I think they're both really good ideas. The first one is refer out. So refer patients out to practitioners that you may have been aware of that are open to working with you. So send them patients that you think are going to be really helped by that, and write a letter that goes with it, explaining where you've come from, where you're up to, and what you're hoping to achieve with their help. And that lets them understand that you do have a broad picture about how you can work together. The second thing would be to definitely go and knock on their door, say, hey, would you love to have a cup of coffee? And I'd like to talk to you about a couple of cases that I'm really, of interest with. I've had a couple of patients from you come to me, and I want to talk about them, but also I've got other ones as well. And just go backwards and forwards and discuss, hey, what do you do, and how would you approach this issue and that issue? Let me tell you about what I'm seeing in my practice, and where I'm getting great results and where I'm really struggling. Do you think you could help with that? And when they hear that, they really want to get on board with you. So I definitely do walk around, and there will be one in five practitioners who go, yep, I'm on board with you. And there's another three or four that go, what the hell are you talking about? Particularly dentists, who most of them really don't even know how the TMJ works. They don't understand the mechanics. They don't understand airway, how big an issue that is. But yet there is a growing field of practitioners where that is their whole practice, and they are very interested in that. So find them out and work with them, because parents know what the issue is, and they want a team of people who can help them. And I think that is the best approach of trying to make those connections. And I just want to touch on, we SOT did our annual convention last year, and it was on this topic, on craniofacial development. And we had many different speakers there. We had dentists and speech pathologists and orofacialologists, and they were all there helping to expand our knowledge on the topic. And they were also in the room as well. They were listening in, and then they were up on stage as well. So all of that mingling was just awesome. There are some practitioners who work in the same office, so they're there at the same time, and that holistic approach is kind of in-house. Like, for example, my partner Beck, and my wife, she works part-time in a dental practice, along with the dentist. And that's in particular when they're fitting splints and appliances in young kids. They do that to ensure that they've got like the correct pressures happening, they've got the right device size, and then she'll be working on that child at the time to kind of unlock that cranial system and enhance the impact of the device and the appliance kind of into this cranial skeletal system. So her role is kind of very immediate while they're doing that. I mean, for me, for most practitioners, we schedule the child to have a visit with us on the day that they see their dentist, so that the device adjustment that they're getting done and the chiropractic adjustment kind of happen together. I mean, the expanded device is actually, I call it a cranial device, because it really does improve the flexion and the extension of the cranium, and it helps to pump the CSF around the brain, and it encourages that proper airway development. So it's really a cranial device. Some dentists use what we call RMEs, which are rapid maxillary expanders, and they're where they're fixed to the either drilled into the maxilla or they're fixed to the teeth on the maxilla, and they are wound quite regularly to create this widening and this expansion. And look, in some cases, I think that's required because they're coming on late to the issue, or the child's really struggling and really needs a quick change. I would prefer, though, like a light wire, slower device, or an appliance that does it, like an Alf appliance, or there's these other guides which are called Vivos. They enhance that kind of natural craniofacial development at a pace which the body likes to keep up with. So the earlier you apply it and you do it slower, then there is less kind of pushback and with the body, and the nervous system can kind of tolerate that as the child's going along. There are a few times where we've seen dysregulated kids who are desperate to get some airway and some growth, and they've really cranked on the RMEs, and it's really blown their system out of the water. It's a really powerful thing on the nervous system, so we've had to kind of slow it down after that. But there,
But
you
that
know.
would be also, just in saying that though, sorry to interrupt you, but that would be, you'd have to make sure that the child was receiving their chiropractic care simultaneously. If you were either using the RME or even the slower expansion aspect, it's the critical point here is to ensure that the child is receiving the chiropractic adjustment in order to
At the
help them
time they get
cope.
it, and also throughout
Correct.
regularly, because
Correct.
that is, our adjustments are helping their system adapt appropriately to the changes. And the dentist wants to see this change occur as quickly as possible, but also effectively as possible. And you can speed up the use of, even with braces. I mean, braces just happen faster with through cranial adjusting and through and you've seen it as well, Kim, in your practice. Rather than having braces for 2 years, give them some chiropractic adjusting, and it happens in a year, and then they can get their braces off. So, it really does help the dentist get their job done better,
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Such an important factor. Maybe some of our listeners, particularly the younger chiropractic students or new graduates, might want to take that in consideration, knowing that we're clinically exceptionally important in helping that child go through that development. So I really appreciate that. That's really given a greater understanding, and I hope our listeners take note of that because that's a really important factor, especially coming from somebody with that much experience such as yourself and all through all those years. Darren, it's been an absolute pleasure, and one of the things that, I mean, you would be able to do this amazingly here is all our wonderful guests. I ask them three things that they have to share with me as we sort of wrap up the podcast. Is three tips, Darren, that you think, I mean, you've got a wealth of knowledge and a wealth of experience, so I can easily rely on you to give me this. Is three tips for students and new graduates, particularly new graduates as well, that will inspire and support them in their chiropractic journey.
Okay, so look, I guess in response to kind of this topic, and make it specific for this, if we summarize it and we think about, okay, if we have a child that comes and sees us who is struggling, who is dysregulated, so he's ADHD, ODD, they've got allergy issues, they've got gut issues, they've got behavioral issues, they've got learning difficulties, maybe they've got bedwetting. I would love the conversation then to look a little bit beyond their structural stuff and say, let's have a look at their airway. Let's have a look at their craniofacial development. Let's look at what tensions there might be on the cranial system, and potentially affecting their nervous system that way. So I guess learn the skills required to be able to assess that, so that when the parent comes in and says, "Can you check my child? Tell me if you can figure out what's going on," that you can pretty much with confidence go, "Yeah, absolutely. I would love to check your child, and I can explain to you in chiropractic terms and in general health terms, maybe what's happening for your child." And that might mean that you have to attend some pediatric seminars, like in Spiral, or you might need to go to EST cranial, workshops, or learn some TMJ procedures, but have the required knowledge so that you can be able to explain it to that parent in the appropriate way. So understanding the motions of the head. So that would be the first one, learn the skills. And I guess the second one, which helps you in your practice with kids, is put a glove on and put put your finger in a kid's mouth and have a look, because there is a wealth of knowledge that you're going to get really, really quickly from doing that, from what you can feel, from what you can see, from the soft tissue arches, from the development of the maxilla, the cranial tensions, the way the child reacts to you doing that. That's going to tell you a lot about potentially what's going on with that child.
And
I know a lot of students and a lot of new grads don't put their finger in kids and babies' mouths very often, but it's a great way to get that information. All right, last one, number three, ask some pretty good questions that are going to reveal where is this child struggling. So in your history or with your parent that comes to you, you know, ask questions like, are they a noisy sleeper? Are they fussy with their food? Do they have, you know, aversion to different textures? Have they had their tonsils and adenoids removed? Have a look at them, see if you think that it's affecting their airway. Do they mouth breathe? I mean, they're really simple questions that can really open the conversation, and it will make the parent question, oh, that's interesting you asked that. This is what's showing up for them. Great. You know, let's go down that avenue and see if we can help affect that. So
yeah, wonderful, Darren. Yeah. I might add a little bit of a disclaimer that make sure that those people have never put a glove on and gone into their kids' mouths, maybe head down to SOT and do the course, and that'll give you a really great idea of how to go about doing that.
Yeah, I think so. Because we teach you the skills, we give you the gloves, yes. And you get getting in there and getting dirty.
Yep.
And you know, look, the reason that I think you should be doing this, and it's not because, you know, of just SOT or anything like that. It's because, you know, I see changes in kids from using other practitioners and doing the cranial work and making these changes that, you know, the medical profession and the information that the parents have been getting, you know, they would call them miracle changes, you know. Mm. And I don't call them miracles. I just kind of learned to expect that that's a proper normal level of function that we're trying to reestablish. So you're going to see those in practice if you start doing this.
Yeah, isn't it amazing how often we deem something as being, we see that all the time, and maybe some of the community and different professionals would say, wow, that's a miracle, you know?
Exactly.
Hey, listen, Darren, it's been an absolute pleasure, and you've been a wonderful guest with the wealth of knowledge and information to share with our listeners. Those who are keen to learn more, I highly recommend doing the SOT series seminar. I know a lot of students who come to visit our office and do observations ask us about that. I can't endorse the information that I learned from SOT and from yourself and all the other SOT practitioners as well. So I do appreciate that enormously. And I do appreciate your time today. I know we're coming towards the end of the year and there's a lot on. And so to be able to squeeze that time in to talk to me before our year end, it's been great. And save the best to last, like I said. So I appreciate your time. Thank you so much, Darren. Yeah,
thank you, Kim. I appreciate it as well.
As you know, this is the last episode for our ACA podcast for the year. From everybody, well, firstly, I just want to say thank you for listening for my first year as the host. I can't thank all our listeners enough, and I appreciate everybody's warm support over the course of the year. I hope this podcast, along with all the other podcasts I've done, has been helpful in your quest for excellence. And I look forward to chatting with everyone again at our next ACA podcast, which won't be till January. So from everybody at ACA and the Marcoms team and myself, have a wonderful and merry Christmas and have a safe new year. And I look forward to chatting to everybody in the new year. So have a wonderful time, guys. Take care.